Bonk.
Dad.
What's on your mind?
I kind of have to go to the bathroom.
What? We just started. The music's not even done playing. Do you want to go?
No.
Just go.
Oh, wait.
What? You got to learn. Every podcast I do, I pee the second before we go out there. And then I still need to pee six times during it. You can ask Vinny, every giant beast cast.
I mean, if it was just a pee, I would say, please excuse me for a moment.
Oh, my goodness.
I might have something bigger percolating.
We can stop the podcast recording right now. You're just going to sit there percolating for 40 minutes?
I just want everyone to know while I'm having this heated discussion that I really have to poop.
Yeah, we get real heated on here with each other. It's a debate show.
I feel this way about the movie. Well, you're wrong about the movie. I feel this way about the film.
All whilst having to poop.
That's what makes it special.
What's the most we've disagreed on a movie?
It was probably the last episode of Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh.
I really hated it.
At first.
I've come around on it.
I remember appreciating the dumbness of Gamer, and I think you were not into it.
Oh, yeah.
I remember just, it was so fucking dumb that I like dumb a lot.
It was absurd. I can appreciate the absurdity of it. It's just hard, you know, whenever mainstream tries to do something video game related, mm-hmm. especially back then in that era, which was mid-2000s, 2010-ish.
That sounds right. Yeah.
I mean, now you could have that represented more faithfully, I feel like.
It's still rare, honestly.
It's still rare, but there's that show, like, Mythic Quest, which I haven't actually seen, but I've heard that it's decent, at least in terms of, like, game development. Not like, realistically, like, showing people coding or anything, but you know what I mean.
As long as a development or show has a somebody who has played a video game in the last 10 years on staff and they listen to that person, I feel like you're not going to get those Space Invader sound effects and those, like, super bad, like remember Russian Doll?
I was just going to say that. It's insane to me that, like, you know, I work in game consulting, and I know that, like, developers and publishers spend a lot of money to have external people come and look at their game to tell them what's good about it, what's bad about it, or, like, specifically, like, flagging areas of concern. It just boggles my mind that a big Netflix production like Russian Doll with, you know, Natasha Lyonne, like a big actress, like wouldn't have the foresight to be like, let's bring in one person to just this. Our main character is a game designer, so let's bring in one other person to say what we should do.
Who can point at the screen and be like, "Wow, anybody who's played a game is going to think this is real dumb."
And like her whole thing, like she's this accomplished game designer, and she was like having trouble with her walking animation or something, which is just like, ludicrous. I mean, like what she was showing on screen was like a first class 3D animation. A project.
Well, and it even seemed like they were trying to do like Rockstar, where they were like these kind of like rebel game developers in Manhattan, and it's like that's clearly supposed to be a Rockstar thing. And it seemed like they were trying to make like a GTA type game. They're like, imagine Rockstar, like the Housers being like, this game's great, we just can't get Michael to walk realistically. Like, yeah, I think they got that figured out.
Yeah. Well, if Rockstar is known for anything, it's their walk animations.
That's the one thing that they can hang their hat on, yeah, I think, is walk animations.
Constantly, you know, calling Rockstar GTA the game where you walk around.
Mm-hmm. They call it a walking simulator, is what they call those open world games
they
make.
Politely beep at passersby, and you obey the laws of traffic, and you walk around.
Mm-hmm. Although, I don't know. I guess the news just say it's the game where you kill hookers.
Yeah,
that's the only thing
you
do in it.
Yeah.
It was Titane we were talking about this, just that animation of just like the car bouncing while they're sitting there staring ahead. I always was amused by that.
Yeah, they have mind sex like we're doing right now.
That's right.
Ooh. God,
we're going to get kicked off the podcast waves here. Jeez. I think that was Demolition Man. There was like a mind sex thing going on, right? I think there was like, I think Stallone and Sandra Bullock are like just looking at each other. But then there's some weird thing too where I think she might be like his daughter or something. Ooh. I've only seen it once and have you seen it?
No. Maybe I have. Demolition Man?
Yeah, with Wesley Snipes.
I think I have, but I don't remember anything about it.
I feel like I need to see it again. I've only seen it once, and I remember thinking it was pretty cool.
Nothing cooler than having mind sex with your daughter.
No, not that part. I'm talking more about future Taco Bells and unfreezing a crazy criminal guy. And Stallone, of course. So, yes. But speaking of disagreeing on films that we watch for this podcast, I don't think we've ever disagreed more on this one that we're about to talk about, because you didn't like it. And I thought it was excellent.
What are you talking about? I loved this film.
Okay, then we're in agreement.
I have my Geely tattoo right here.
Oh, there it is. You didn't tell me you were getting that. Do you go to New York for that?
Yeah, I got in a big impact font across my chest the word Giggly, or you can call it Geely if you prefer.
Rhymes with really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
That's what, hey, look, who are we to doubt Ben Affleck? I know,
but like, if you have to think about it every time, like, it's not.
How much would someone have to pay you to get Geely and Impact font across your chest tattooed? And you can't ever get it covered or removed.
That's a very obvious area.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Someone said $1 million?
I wouldn't do it for $1 million. It's my whole life.
$5 million.
No, it would have to be like $1 billion.
I would do it for $1 million.
That's an Impact font. That's not even a nice font.
I know, but I would do it. For $1 million, I would do it.
Well, you have a male body that's constantly covered by t-shirts. I'm wearing low-cut shirts and stuff.
That's true. That's true. And I don't even think many people would bat an eye if I decided to do that. And that would just be a story. It's like, oh, yeah, this thing? Yeah, I got $1 million.
People would just be like, oh, whatever. Just add it to the list of weird things Dan Reichert does.
Yeah, but I made $1 million off it. Of course I would do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you offering me $1 million to do that?
I don't have $1 million.
Okay. Well, all you listeners out there, if any of you have $1 million to spare, that offer's open.
Oh, all right. You just have to get the tattoo. Like, are
it's
you
fine?
You think getting a tattoo is fine? You think you'd be able to tolerate getting a tattoo?
I'm not saying it'd be pleasant. I probably, but I mean, I could sit through it for $1 million. Right. I could do a lot of things for $1 million.
What other weird thing can you do for $1 million?
Eat pickles.
Come on, that's a joyous occasion. I pay to eat a pickle.
Give me something and I'll tell you yes or no if I would do it for $1 million.
Okay. Assassinate.
No. You don't even have to finish that sentence. No, I'm not going to murder anyone.
All right. Make a car that can like drive 20 miles.
Do I get to expense all of the parts?
No.
I have to fund this thing that I will certainly struggle with?
You just have to make a little go-kart. That's it. Anyone could do it.
Can I just buy engine parts and stuff off eBay and figure out how to put it together?
I think so.
I would try.
Okay.
Okay. Geely.
Geely.
Oh, man. This is one that I have had in my notes of like potential podcast movies to watch for years. And it's never been on streaming stuff until now. I saw it's on Hulu. I think it might be on some other stuff, too. So keep an eye out there. But it is definitely on Hulu. This is notoriously one of the worst movies of all time. And that is why I wanted to watch it for this podcast.
Yeah, it's one of those really bad movies that's like, it's hard to describe succinctly why it's so bad. Like, you really have to experience it. For example, if I just tell you the writing's terrible and there's no chemistry between the actors, like,
right.
That's all right. Yeah, there are a lot of movies like that. But you really have to experience this to know why it's so bad.
Yeah, and I was just looking at the wiki for this and you know, just reading the plot, it's just like, okay, it's like this mob thing, romantic comedy or whatever. But it doesn't get into, like, the wiki's not going to tell you about all the parts where it's just, like, Brian is weirdly rapping Baby Got Back, you know, and it's just very uncomfortable to watch. Like, you know, stuff like that doesn't come through in just, like, a plot summary.
Yeah, it's, so, set the stage here. It's
yes.
2003.
Yes.
Okay. I was in middle school, elementary school, maybe.
Okay.
You were...
Early college.
Early college, okay. Yes. Everyone can remember what was happening on the radio back then. You got your Ashantis and your maybe some...
Strokes and the Hives, yeah, and the White Stripes. Yeah.
Sure. And this is a 2003 rom-com. So think about all those sensibilities from 2003.
Oh,
how far we've
man.
Come. And just the rom-com genre in general tends to really not be particularly... evolved, I guess. And this is a 2003 rom-com. So just, you know.
Almost 20 years ago.
Almost 20 years ago. So, you know, based on that alone, you can kind of gauge what your expectations would be. And then this, when you consider the fact that this movie is pretty much just a vehicle for J-Lo and Ben Affleck, because they were a couple at the time.
Did they have like a, were they like Baffleck or something? Or what were, or B-Lo? Bennifer. Okay. I knew there was some, why didn't I go to Bennifer? I thought B-Lo might have been.
No.
It was not Baffleck?
No.
Baffles? Okay. Bennifer probably works better. Okay.
Yeah. Bennifer. And then there was Brangelina.
Right. So they were together. They didn't meet on this, right? I don't really know celebrity gossip stuff.
No, but just since I mentioned it, I think Brangelina did meet on the set of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, or at least that's where their romance kindled.
But that's not like a notoriously bad movie. I thought it'd be funny if Bennifer met on the set of this, and then they were just constantly reminded of Geely because that was their origin story.
Yeah, I think this would be like the nail in the coffin, kind of like at the end of your relationship, this would be what broke the camel's back to star in Geely together.
I should have asked Jennifer Lopez about this when she went to my gym.
Oh, yeah. She's famously really friendly to random people.
Is she not?
Yeah, she's total fucking cunt.
I did not make eye contact with her.
Yeah, she's not widely considered a huge mean person.
Really?
Yeah,
really. I did not know that.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of, like, whenever a Reddit thread pops up that's like, what celebrity do you, you know, had a bad encounter with or whatever, J-Lo's always at the top. But also, more personally, I used to work with a person at a nonprofit who was formerly a doorman at a building in which she lived. And he was none too kind in describing how she would treat him and the rest of the staff. So.
Well, that's very telling, I think. I honestly, that is like one of the quickest ways I will judge someone is if I see them being an asshole to like a waiter or a service person. It's like, okay, well, yeah. If that's how they treat that person, then like they would treat you that same way if you were in that position. That's just how they treat people that they deem below them, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's all to say that you shouldn't feel bad about eviscerating this movie. It's a terrible film. And, you know, Ben Affleck has proven to be also an asshole in his own special way. I mean, I think he like fucking hit or groped John Mulaney's ex-wife or some shit.
Really?
She's a makeup artist. Yeah.
Jeez. Okay.
Yeah. Or something. Maybe I'm confusing him with Franco. But there is definitely weirdness.
I've heard that stuff about Franco for sure.
Yeah, there is definitely weirdness about this dude, Ben Affleck. Anyway, I am just speaking out my ass. I probably shouldn't be brimming that stuff I don't know about for a fact. But anyway, this movie's really, really something.
It is, and it was notoriously bad back then. I mean, I remember that being the entire conversation about this movie back then. It's not like this was like, oh, a forgettable movie back then that hasn't aged well. Like, no, it was terrible, terrible, terrible back then, and time has not helped it at all.
You know what I also think didn't help this movie?
That?
The fact that its name is Jiggly. Or Geely, which you have to see the movie to know how it's pronounced, because if you just see it, it just looks like it's a giggly, which is like a, you know, not something that you recognize or that's catchy at all.
Well, it doesn't tell you anything about the movie at all. Like, you don't even know that that's the name of Ben Affleck's character. In fact, I think I assumed it was Jennifer Lopez's character name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, her name, we don't actually know till the end.
Her real name. Yeah, she goes by Ricky for part of this. Yeah. So, anywho, this is I did not know this was like a mob type thing. I thought that this was like just a rom-com, like, oh, you know, are these two going to get together and date? I guess I don't see rom-coms, so I guess I didn't know that they were like, oh, this is like a mob-themed rom-com or whatever. But yeah, it establishes what Larry is Ben Affleck early on. He's got a guy, he's threatening him by putting him in a dryer and basically saying like, oh, the body's this much moisture, and like, imagine when like I put you through this dryer and you're just going to be a bunch of like beef jerky with tattoos. And it's like, I think you'd just spin around and get really dizzy and wet probably if you were in a
dryer,
not even wet.
You would get opposite. You get extra dry.
That's right. You would just get dizzy.
Like, they don't re-wet the clothes in the dryer.
Yeah, but he's acting like it's that would be weird. Yeah. They're acting like that would be some torture device.
It would be deeply unpleasant.
Well, yeah, but like when you think of like a mob guy going in for a shakedown, he's going to like, you know, break your thumbs or knees or something like that. It's just like, what mob guy's going to go in and just make you dizzy?
Well, first of all, I don't know about the viability in general of it as torture device, because from what I understand, like if you were in a dryer, you could probably just kick the door open while you were in it, while it was turned on.
Yeah, we did that once. We put our friend Ed in a dryer in the dorms like late at night one night, and he just spun around. And
really?
Then, yeah. I don't think he kicked it open. I think we just spun him around for like a minute and then opened the door.
Oh, he didn't get hurt?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, because it's like your body's like pressed up against the side, so you're not like tumbling, you know? You're just kind of like in there and going around in circles, you know?
Well, what if it was a really big dryer?
Yeah, that would suck because you'd just be like, you'd be getting concussed every 2 seconds and like falling and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, these look like big laundromat dryers.
It's true.
Like the laundromat that we'd go to in New York City across from our apartment, those dryers were gigantic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, you could pay extra to do a really big load.
Did you ever do that?
Really expensive. I mean, if you pay extra to do a really big load, you are saving money rather than, you know, doing two separate loads. So yeah, sometimes I would.
Okay. There's a little tip for you folks.
Yeah, I would, you know, obviously wash the whites and the colored separate. and then you could dry them together. So I would do that.
Yeah. Oh, nice, nice. There's a little tip for you. That's a bonus. Yeah. So basically, Lewis is this mob leader, middleman, something or other. Yeah. He's a mob guy who's like Ben Affleck's boss. I'm just going to say Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez the whole time.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck's boss is this guy, Lewis, and he's just kind of like stereotypical, just like mob guy, like, yeah, do this thing. You know?
See, I disagree. I don't feel like he's stereotypical. I feel like he's so grossly incompetent. I mean, at least if you're going to be in the mob, like, you have to have some degree of like professionalism and competence. Like, this guy's just a blubbering fool.
Well, yeah, and most exemplified by the whole reason this movie exists, which is like basically. Ben Affleck needs to go kidnap the brother, which we're going to get into that, of a federal prosecutor and then use that as leverage so this mob guy doesn't go to jail or whatever. But after he does this and he kidnaps the kid, he also sends Jennifer Lopez to also do that and keep an eye on him and stuff. Like, why wouldn't you just send Jennifer Lopez in the beginning if you can't trust Ben Affleck?
Yeah, it's or just do it yourself, you know, if you're so concerned. But this is just an unbelievably stupid idea from the get-go. I mean, it's a federal prosecutor. Even if it was just your average Joe, it's not a good idea to kidnap someone for extortion. You're kidnap someone for any
just in
any
general
reason.
I'd say I'm anti-kidnapping.
Yeah,
yes.
It's a bad idea, but like if someone is a federal prosecutor, they have, you know, probably the whims of a tremendous police force or FBI at their fingertips, and you know, they could easily find their kidnapped loved one. But anyway, it doesn't matter. It's all just a stupid excuse for these fucking idiots to be locked in an apartment for an hour. That's the entire movie takes place in the shitty ass apartment.
There's like two sets, and it's all just like weirdly quiet. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that too? Like during conversations, it's just like there's like these long pauses with no chemistry. There's either no music playing or just like weirdly chosen music.
It's the most. Like, it doesn't even seem like anyone wrote this music for the movie. It seems like it was just purchased from a royalty-free library of songs. It was just the most generic, like, Muzak stuff. Really bad and so loud and kind of almost all the time playing.
And at times almost inappropriate, which is like, this doesn't fit the mood that's happening in the scene at all. But yeah, it's either playing too loud and too obvious and distractingly weird, or it's just like long stretches of dialogue that just, all the dialogue feels so written. And you know, I don't know how much to blame on the performers here or the script, or maybe the director was like, read this specifically and don't, you know improv at all, but oh god, it's just bad.
It's really bad, the dialogue is terrible. There's some really awful like entire conversations. One of my favorite was when Ricky, Jennifer Lopez's character, is not only is she super hot, but she's also very gay.
That's right. She's established this early on. She's a lesbian and does not have any physical interest in Ben Affleck.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop her from just like doing yoga in front of him and like just being unbelievably provocative.
Yeah.
And literally sharing his bed. Like, this is you would never, like, who would make these choices? If you're not interested in someone who's clearly interested in you, why are you fucking sleeping next to them? Why are you wearing a little tiny kimono? Why are you doing yoga in front of them? Why are you talking endlessly about your vagina and how the mouth is the twin sister of the vagina?
That is verbatim. The mouth is the twin sister of the vagina. Yes.
Yeah.
That is a direct line of dialogue, she says, while doing like sweaty night yoga, while he stands there and screams, like, oh, why don't you want to fuck me? God damn it, this sucks. You won't fuck me.
I've got to say, I've been in positions in which I haven't wanted to have sex with someone. And then when they yell at me, why don't you have sex with me? That's when I'm like, okay, that's when I take off my clothes and get to it. Because
we clarify, I've never yelled. You're not talking about me. I've never yelled, why won't you have sex
with
me?
I love having sex with you. It's the best. I'm just
Let's talk about that for a while.
All right, well.
No.
So she establishes early on that she's gay and not interested in men, but you know, naturally as the movie goes on, they do end up having sex. And they try, I feel like there's this one scene with Ricky and Larry's mother, in which it, like, that one scene is kind of what's used to justify everything that happens subsequently, like when she, you know, decides to, you know, have sex with Larry and stuff. And Larry's mom is talking about how, like, oh, not everything's so black and white and this and that, which is, you know, absolutely true. There's, you know, a spectrum, obviously. But I feel like it's just used in this context as just an excuse to have them fuck.
Well, yeah, the way Ben Affleck's mom puts it is just like, oh, look, you say you're a lesbian, but I used to be adventurous back in the day, too. Like, basically acting like, oh, okay, you think you're a lesbian, but it's like, it'll pass. It's a phase. It's like, even that is just like, what are you?
It's terrible. It's not like just a phase. And that this movie suggests that people could easily just change their, proclivities on a whim is just ludicrous.
Well, and it's not just like one scene or whatever. Like, that is a critical part of this movie, is that Affleck, which, by the way, are we supposed to want her to get with him? Because this entire time, he is a fucking terrible character. Like he is like shoving a disabled kid against the wall, screaming at him to be normal, which we got to get into that kid later. But like, he is just awful to her. Like, he's pissed off. Like he's mad that she won't fuck him even though she's gay. And like, it's just like, he's fucking awful. So why are we like, are we supposed to hope for this ending where they get together? Which, we'll jump to the end here. They do get together, basically. She pulls up and she's like, he's like, oh, so you decided to hop the fence? And she's like, well, I wouldn't go that far, but get in the car. And it's like, it's implied that, like, okay, she got over her lesbianism and now she's gonna fuck this terrible dude.
Yeah, and she does this weird thing too where she like asks him to look at his nails, and depending on how he looks at his nails, that suggests that he leans feminine or masculine.
Yeah.
Or like, saying that, oh, you really look good in mascara. Like, just joking that he's like actually, very feminine. Which, he's tries to be this super macho guy. So it's an interesting idea, but obviously extremely poorly executed. And there's this one scene where Ricky's ex-girlfriend like just invades Ben Affleck's apartment. Like,
yes.
Just somehow knows where he lives and just comes in, starts screaming, just being off the wall, grabs a knife, slits her wrist. And the movie really makes no bones about this very dramatic wrist slitting, like literally attempting suicide in front of him. Everyone's just having a good laugh while this upbeat music plays in the background.
Well, I realized they've shoehorned that in. That's the thing. They shoehorn these scenes in. Like, the one with the mom is just to kind of like, set up, maybe you're not really a lesbian. This one, that scene of the wrist slitting, it's literally just to get them to the hospital because they have to steal this thumb. And they have to, like, it's like a Big Lebowski thing where you got to send a thumb to prove that, you've got the person kidnapped or whatever. But that's the only thing this scene serves, is she shows up, slits her wrists, that gets them to the hospital, which, you pointed out that, like, there's this scene where it's like Jennifer Lopez was coming out of the shower when she noticed the girl being there.
Yeah.
And by the time they're at the hospital, she's like all done up and wearing this thing that's like...
When you are getting dressed for the hospital, keep in mind, Jennifer Lopez, straight out of the shower, the only reason she's getting dressed is to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Why would you put on this shirt that just amounts to like a tiny sliver of fabric that's held together with safety pins? No bra. You could fully see the tiny curves of her breast and full outline of her areola. And like, what? This is the least appropriate hospital wear you could possibly wear. I mean, like, at a certain angle, it looks like she's not wearing a shirt at all. It's just like, why would you want... You're surrounded by death. These people screaming about their pain and their agony and loved ones, crying over the loss of their, family member, and you're prancing around with your tits flying all around. With
their club gear on.
Jesus.
But like, you think about it, and that really is the only thing that scene, like that whole slitting both wrists scene, wacky scene, is to get them to the hospital and so they can be like, oh, we're here. We should go to the morgue and cut off a thumb, Like,
who knew it was so easy to acquire limbs from dead people? You just sneak your way down to the morgue.
Which, by the way, while they're looking in at this like aftermath of like the suicide attempt, Brian, the prosecutor's son, is talking about how his penis is sneezing when he sees them, and he's looking down and basically saying, "I'm coming in my pants." Which, again, we'll have a larger conversation about Brian in a second here. But at this point, when Jennifer Lopez leaves the hospital, again leaving this traumatic experience of this attempted suicide, she says something about like, "Oh, I bet you'd like it if I sucked your cock for 12 hours." Like, what was that? I don't even remember what that was about.
I mean, even if you're broken up with someone, if you were in a relationship with someone and like it was fresh enough to where they're confronting you about something and then they try to kill themselves, would you really be in the mood to suck cock for 12 hours?
Or even like make a like lighthearted like cock sucking joke?
The last thing, whenever death happens, the last thing you want to do is just suck some cocks. But yeah, so I just want to mention too, they cut the thumb off, or Ben Affleck cuts the thumb off with a plastic butter knife.
Yeah, he just happens to, like, in the morgue, there's like a Chinese delivery order just sitting there.
Just sitting next to the dead bodies. Why would you eat next to the dead bodies?
Yep, and who's the person that ordered that? Why do they leave that in there? If they left it in there, it's good and cold. They're going to be back in there very soon. And no, they got plenty of time for Ben Affleck to cut a thumb off with a transparent plastic takeout knife while Brian wraps Baby Got Back while turning his back to it. Jesus Christ, This is fucking terrible. Also, speaking of the cock-sucking 12 hours thing, there's also the scene early on, one of the 8 scenes where Ben Affleck's like, why the fuck are you gay? Why won't you fuck me? She says, well, you know, if I wasn't gay, it'd be really hard to not get under the covers and do you big time. Quote, do you big time.
Yeah, she also moves while they do eventually fuck, because there's a bull and a cow, she says.
Right, right, and yes.
She, moves. But anyway, I just want to mention real quick, you made a really good point about the takeout food being left in the morgue, because it's literally a refrigerator.
Yeah.
Unless you have a salad, like, that's just going to make your food super cold.
You're right. I didn't even think about the refrigerator part of it. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay, so let's back up a little bit here. That's right. The bowl thing, you mentioned that. Jennifer Lopez is in bed, and this is when, like, she was about to sleep on the floor. Ben Affleck, like, convinces her to sleep in the bed, and then he's so fucking pumped about the fact that he convinced this woman that's not interested in him to lay in his bed that he spends, like, 20 minutes in the bathroom taking his shirt off and, like, flexing in the mirror, being like, yeah, you're the bull, you're the alpha, you're the man, yeah, just, like, flexing and, like, shadow boxing in the wind, in the mirror and stuff.
Is that what guys do?
Well, yeah, if I ever say I'm going to the bathroom before I come to bed, it's like I'm just, you know, I'm pumping myself up.
I really felt that this moment was a callback to Taxi Driver. Martin Scorsese's finest, clearly. It was really dumb. Why did he do that? And he just ended up, like, crawling to bed and then heavily breathing on her while she's trying to read a book called Being Peace, because she's this, like, secret martial artist lady. I don't know. She's, like, super into martial arts, and she talks about
Sun Tzu and stuff like that.
And yeah. But anyway,
so back to Brian. Yeah. Okay, so we got to touch on this. Speaking of things that have not aged well. Mm-hmm. Oh my fucking God.
It's the epitome of not aging well. First of all, they say the R word multiple times throughout this movie.
Yeah.
And his mental disability is just played for laughs all the time.
And also, it's just, like, so, it's such a 2003, just like, oh, he's disabled, you know, developmentally disabled. But that, obviously, it's nothing even remotely realistic. It's just like, okay, he's just, like, playing with sunflower seeds while mumbling about Baywatch, and then sometimes it, like, resembles, like, a Tourette's thing where, like, they just have him, like, twitching and saying curse words and stuff. Like, it just seems like they just hired a guy in 2003 and was like, okay, just do every stereotype of a disabled character.
It's a real grab bag. At one point, he says that he's brain damaged, so it could be the result of some kind of, like, you know, injury. Traumatic brain injuries.
I think you just put more thought into it than anyone involved with this movie ever did.
Well, yeah, it's very just like, let's just take all the different symptoms of various mental disorders and put it all in one person.
Well, and then dumb gags where it's like, so he kidnaps this kid from the, like, I don't know if it's like a hospital or some sort of home situation or something, but he kidnaps him. And then as they're driving, this kid, his obsession is he wants to go to the Baywatch. Mm-hmm. So clearly the kid saw Baywatch on TV and he's obsessed with, like, he wants to see Baywatch. I don't know. It's not really clearly put out. But while they're in the car, Ben Affleck is trying to trick the kid into thinking that, like, they're going to go to the Baywatch. And so he does this several times in the movie, speaks into a flashlight, you know, just like, oh, the kid's stupid, you know, all this talking to the flashlight, and he won't know. He has a cell phone. Ben Affleck has a cell phone that he uses several times in the movie, and he's trying to trick the kid, but it's like, it's a gag that, like, oh, the kid doesn't know that the flashlight's
look
not a phone.
Look how stupid this kid is. Look how stupid this brain-damaged kid is. Right? Isn't that hilarious?
And again, we're just supposed to, like, I just can't believe any part of Ben Affleck's character is meant to be, like, you're supposed to cheer for him or like him
first
at all.
First of all, I mean, at its core, just on the most, like, macro level possible, these two assholes are abducting someone who needs to be, who needs care.
Yeah.
He needs, like, proper care. And he doesn't need to be pushed around or manipulated or made to do things that he's not used to. Like, you know, I'm sure at his the hospital where he was staying originally, where they abducted him from, he probably had a routine and he was cared for. Like, these aren't good people.
Right. There are times where the kid literally says, like, I want to go home, you know, and it's like they kidnapped him and are holding him in a shitty apartment.
It's really sad. And they never talk about how, you know, bad or dark or evil it is. It's all just laughs. It's all just like, ha ha, and like a rootin' tootin' soundtrack in the background.
Yeah.
And the kid's like rapping and stuff like, oh, that Brian being Brian.
That's a repeated thing where it's like the kid is into like early 90s hip hop, so he'll be just like badly rapping Baby Got Back or something like that. That happens numerous times of him just like weirdly dancing in a kitchen, you know, rapping something. It's,
well, my favorite and the most confusing Brian scene is actually like right at the end where they're driving and they do pass quote unquote Baywatch, which is actually just people filming a music video.
Just people in bikinis,
but it's
yeah.
just like, dude, just fucking go to any beach. It seems like they're in California, right? I mean, like, if you go to any beach in California, there's going to be tons of babes there for you to oogle at. But this, Brian, like, has no social skills. And Ricky and Larry just bring him to, quote unquote, the Baywatch. And they just tell him to just go right ahead and go among these bikini-clad women to just oogle them, I guess.
Well, they send him down there. They're on the beach. And so everyone else is in, like, bikinis and stuff. Yeah. He's wearing five layers of clothing, including a hoodie and a leather jacket. Yeah. And like, just like, yeah, go down there. We're going to drive off and skip town, yeah. basically. Jesus it's fucking
bad,
Christ.
Bad.
And of course, he does talk to a girl, and apparently there's chemistry there, and they dance together, and there's just this really awkward scene where they're filming a dance scene for some music video, and it's just like the shots of this kid dancing are just like, oh, boy, this is all just hard to watch.
It's really hard to watch.
Yeah. Christopher Walken's in it for a scene.
Al Pacino.
Early on, yeah. Christopher, what is the Christopher Walken scene? He's a cop that shows up for once. Like, they had him for like 2 hours, I guess.
Yeah, his whole appearance is completely unnecessary. He's like a suspicious detective who thinks that Larry is involved in Brian's kidnapping, but never pursues it any further. His scene is could be completely eradicated from the film and nothing would change.
And it seems like they were just doing a poor attempt to do like wacky Christopher Walken. Like they saw Pulp Fiction. They're like, oh, let's just have this weird non sequitur scene with, but it doesn't work at all. He talks about someone having a pie on their head or something. It's just, it's terrible. It adds absolutely nothing to the movie. Mm-hmm. As much as I like Christopher Walken. It's also the scene. I can't buy either of the protagonists. I say in air quotes, Affleck or Lopez as like tough guys or, you know, tough girls, you know, mm-hmm. because even though they're supposed to be these mob people or whatever, like they go to a restaurant, like an outdoor restaurant. And, there's these punk kids playing mm-hmm. loud music. And Jennifer Lopez is like, I'm going to go handle this or whatever. And so she goes up and it's just this too long scene of her talking to this kid about how like, oh, I know this ancient art called the strike of lost memory or
that takes the past or something.
Yeah. The rip that takes the past. And it's just this, she's doing a bad job with these bad lines where mm-hmm. it's just like, she's supposed to be this intimidating, like I'm going to rip your eyeball out. And it takes part of the visual cortex that stores mm-hmm. memory and you're not going to remember anything you ever saw. And it's like, you can see what they're going for with this scene, but none of it plays at all.
No. And it's just so unbelievably unrealistic.
Well, it does get us to the point at least where Ben Affleck grabs one of the kid's laptops, break it across his knee and then says, go to suckmydick.com. That's, you know, it's worth it for that, I think.
Yeah, I was saying, like, laptops were really expensive back then.
Oh, yeah.
It was really shitty of him. Yeah. All they did was play music.
They were playing music loud and being kind of dicks when they were called out about it. Yeah. Jeez. They take a thumb from the morgue, as we said, and then they go to the fucking UPS store, and
they mail it in a paper envelope.
A 6x9 paper. Not even one of the ones with, like, the bubbled yeah. stuff on the inside that would at least kind of soak up maybe some of the blood. It's just a straight-up paper envelope, 6x9, and they buy it from the lady at the counter who's, like, this hot lady, and Jennifer Lopez is staring at... They're just silently staring yeah. at each other and smiling for a while, and that gets Ben Affleck mad.
Again, Jennifer Lopez's character is a lesbian, therefore right. she has to be sexually attracted to any other female in the movie.
Of course, which makes Naturally. Ben Affleck furious, and they have a drive in the car afterwards, and he screams at her about how he won't fuck him. yeah, so they mail the thumb in this paper 6x9 thing. They wind up back in bed. He's screaming about not being gay because she brought up the fingernail mm-hmm. thing. And then she says, oh, you just had a crush on me because I could kick your ass. And then they start making out. And then she starts saying, like, I thought you wanted to be my bitch. Mm-hmm. And then she, like, lays down. And this is verbatim. I wrote this down. Mm-hmm. She's looking at him and she's, like, spreading her legs, mm-hmm. basically. And she goes, where are you going? It's turkey time. Uh-huh. Gobble, gobble. Lay some of that sweet heterolingus on me. That is a line of dialogue that someone wrote and Jennifer Lopez said.
Yeah.
And now he just doesn't want to.
And now, yeah, despite all his groaning throughout the movie that she wouldn't have sex with him, now that she's literally spread eagle in front of him.
Saying, like, go to town,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, he's like, oh, well, you know, girls are probably better at it because they know exactly how to do it. And it's just so fucking stupid.
And also when he finally does, like, decide to, like, put a move on her there. They just, like, roll over, like, back and forth, like, rolling on top. And it's like,
oh, there's not even any cunnilingus going on.
There's no cunnilingus. There's no thrusting. Like, he gets on top of her, but they're just, like, giggling and rolling back and forth. Like, decide who's on top here. Do something. Like, you're not just rolling around,
just folks.
Making
whoopee like the Sims. Making Sims. Whoopee. Yeah, yeah. It's like, they're not actually having sex. They're just rolling around.
Fuck.
But, yeah, I mean, fucking, dude, just fucking go down on her, man. It's not fucking rocket science.
Yes, So we somehow get to Al Pacino.
Oh, yeah.
God damn it. Between this and Jack and Jill, Al. Well, you know what? Late period, Al Pacino and De Niro. It's like, I kind of get it. It's just like, I think De Niro jokes about it being like, these are the movies I do to pay for my grandkids' college. Yeah. Like, yeah, you look good on you. But here's Al Pacino in a giant loose tie. And it's just looked like weird 2003 Al Pacino here. He shoots Lewis in the head. Mm-hmm. Very confusing because we see this fish tank behind him that does not seem to have an open top. It's just like a glass front. And so he shoots him and the blood sprays all over the glass. But then there's like a close-up shot of like fish eating the parts of brain. I don't know how it would have got in there. Also, tonally, this is a movie that despite being like mob, it's surrounded by mob themes. There hasn't been gunfire or actual murder.
No violence, it's no
like,
action.
No, it's like even the thumb. It's like there's no one's thumb guy. They went to do a corpse and stuff like that. It's not a violent movie to this point. And then he just blasts them in the head. And it's like, here's the fish eating the brains and stuff. It's like, oh, Jesus, okay. Yeah. And then it's just like this long, nothing monologue from Al Pacino. I think they're like, hey, we got Al Pacino. We got to give him something to chew on here. And it's just like, it's nothing. He's saying nothing for like 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, all it is just like, here's the mob boss Al Pacino. That's all you need.
Yeah.
They don't need to embellish it with any meaningful dialogue. But essentially, like, he's upset because they abducted Brian in the first place and then that they botched it by not sending the actual thumb.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'm going to go to jail because of this or whatever. But
yeah, but Ricky, in all her feminine wiles, manages to convince him that they have to keep Ben and her alive because she knows where Brian is and she can silence him.
Right. And so they decide they're just going to basically save their ass by saying that, and then they're going to skip town. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I mean, that's when the Baywatch thing happens. They just let the kid go onto the beach. It's like, all right, go down there. And
no repercussions.
No. You let the kid go. Ben Affleck calls the prosecutor on a payphone and is just like, says where the kid is. And then he basically says to Jennifer Lopez, like, hey, if you ever decide to stop being a lesbian, give me a call. Mm-hmm. And then they make out. she takes his car. And then at the very end, she pulls up in the car again and says, you know, my name's Rochelle and I guess I'm not a lesbian. And then I bet you'd look awesome in some mascara. And then credits.
Yep.
Oh, shit.
What a film.
I mean, a lot of old movies, especially old comedies, haven't aged well. Mm-hmm. This is maybe the most striking of just like, I can't tell you how many scenes I was watching. I was like, what were they fucking, like, even by 2003 standards, it's just like, how did enough people, this is a, was it 70, how much, I wrote it down. It was
$75.6 million budget. It's a stupid script. The writing's terrible. The actors have no chemistry. It's downright offensive.
The actors have no commentary, chemistry, despite the fact that they're in an actual relationship.
Yeah. I almost wonder, too, if that's like the, I don't know of how many movies have people that are actually like in established relationships, but I wonder if like, once you know the person and the mystery is gone, it's hard to recreate that tension of like, you know what I mean?
Like of meeting and flirting and stuff like that when you're so familiar with each other.
Exactly. But who knows? But anyway, no chemistry, terrible writing, offensive writing. It takes place in like two locations. Just atrocious in every way. But $75.6 million budget. So Jennifer Lopez was paid $12 million for her role. Affleck was paid 12.5. So that accounts for almost like $25 million of the $75 million budget. But then the script was rewritten several times. So the budget ballooned further from $54 million to $75.6. So if their salary was $25 million and the original budget was $54 million, then, you know, it was probably like $30 million. But even that is like insane.
I guess Walken and Pacino even to get them for the like hour they had them was probably not cheap, you know.
That's
but
true.
Oh, and the original ending, he was actually shot and killed. Ben Affleck was. Mm. And they have that footage, but test audiences did not like it. I would be more into that.
I'd be really into that, yeah. Someone has to pay for the shit they did in this movie.
No, they just, I guess, are dating and skipping town together, and the kid gets to be at the Baywatch.
Happy ending.
Fuck.
The last movie Barton Brest directed, so the director of Beverly Hills Cop, Midnight Run, Scent of a Woman. He hasn't directed a movie since.
That's the thing. I wanted to look at like, who wrote and directed this? And I wonder if it was just some nobody that never worked again. But it's like, no, this guy made like big fucking movies. And did not after this. Like this was, I wonder if this was a career killer or if he just kind of hung up the boots afterwards, you know? This is, you know, there's a lot of talk about this being one of the worst movies of all time. Mm-hmm. It really, that's not hyperbole. This is one of, like, this is in that Battlefield Earth. I'm trying to think of what else is even in this
Snowman
tier.
Snowman.
Snowman. Yeah, that tier of like, you know, there's the Birdemics and the Troll 2s and the ones, you know, the Room and all mm-hmm. that stuff that's just like incompetently made. But then I'm almost more fascinated with this tier of like a big budget yeah. went into this in major stars mm-hmm. and, you know, like, and how did this pass all, like, you can see how Birdemic got made. Yeah. That I understand that. This, how the fuck does this see the light of day?
Yeah. I just think, you know, Bennifer was such a big thing back then. And I think they were just kind of milking that for all it's worth and just figured that this would naturally be an extension of their popularity. But I mean, why would anyone want to see a movie called Giggly? You know what I mean? Like and obviously, like, you know, Ben Affleck, I just don't buy him as a leading man. Like, he's just not likable. He's not smooth. He doesn't like have charisma. You know what I mean?
I guess I'm trying to think of things that I've liked him in.
Was good. He's good as like a character actor, I think. I mean, like Good Will Hunting.
Mm. Didn't people like Argo? Like Argo won like Best Picture.
Yeah, and I never saw that. He was the lead actor in Argo, but I haven't seen that one either. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't buy him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this is about the worst it gets, I think. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so that's Geely. That's on. Even if you like, I could see people listening to this episode being like, "Well, I don't care about Geely getting spoiled." If you've gotten this far, I would say we've obviously said how bad it is. Watch it if you're at all curious and just mm-hmm. terrible, terrible cinema, because this is like you were saying earlier, Bonk. Mm-hmm. It's hard to convey exactly how bad it is. Like, there's so many just weird things and like the music and the line deliveries and things like that. That if you enjoy bad movies, this is a must watch, I would say.
Yeah, just bad choices all around. Like, not at all realistic to what the female experience would be. Like, just the very first scene that Jennifer Lopez's character is introduced in, she's wearing this super low-cut pants with her midriff showing and her tits hanging out. And she looks unbelievably hot, of course. You wouldn't, no matter who you are, you wouldn't walk into some random dude that you never met's apartment who's there with some other guy. Like, that's just fucking dangerous, you know what I mean? Like, you just wouldn't do that.
Well, she's got the, you know, she can tear your eye out, you know.
Well, we didn't see any of that in the film. We've only heard her talk about it.
So. Despite them both supposed to be like tough mob mm-hmm. folks or whatever, we don't see a second of them actually being tough or capable in any way.
You know, maybe that could have saved the movie if there were like fighting sequences or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, just kind of make it more of an action movie than a rom-com.
Lean into the mob stuff more.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any fucking saving this thing with that kind of script.
I mean, yeah, there's no saving. I'm just saying it would be slightly better. It might be a 7% on Rotten Tomatoes instead of a 6.
Yeah. Fuck. It's historically bad.
Really bad. I'm glad we finally watched it,
though. I am too. You mentioned you were running down a list of things we could do for this week, and you got to Geely, and I was like, okay, I've been waiting for this moment. Mm-hmm. Let's do it. So that is Geely on Hulu. Thanks, Bonk, for sitting through that with me.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Where are we going with that?
I don't know.
And thanks. Special shout out to all of our patrons. Patreon.com/paintingthestream.
Easy.
It's really easy. It's a $5 tier. Gets you early access to episodes.
Wow.
It's the ad-free episodes.
Wow.
Access to the Discord.
Wow.
And it gets written for you by Bonk. It's a Bonk Who Bonked. We have someone this week.
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we got?
This week, we are honoring our friend Tara.
Tara.
Or Tara, but I'm going to say Tara.
And I'll say Tara, just so all of our bases are covered.
Okay. Well, how about I go through the Bonk Who once with Tara, and then I'll do it against.
Okay, great. Let's do it.
The thick fog rolled in, a sign of Tara's return. We knew we were doomed.
Take two.
The thick fog rolled in, a sign of Tara's return. We knew we were doomed.
Excellent. Is Tara some sort of Elden Ring boss showing up and wreaking havoc across the land?
Tara, the goddess of fog.
Yeah, she's got a big health bar there. You show up, you do a couple hits, it's not doing shit, and you leave for like 20 hours. Come back, still kicks your ass.
Yeah, you walk into a conspicuously empty large room, and then all of a sudden the music starts and the health bar appears.
Why is this fucked. Mist all over the opening of the door? Yeah.
Oh, and I'm dead.
Yep, immediately dead. Thank you so much, Tara, or Tara, and Bonk, thank you for joining me.
There's only one way to say this name.
Bonk. That's all, folks. Thanks for joining us this week. Hey, we will see you all next week.
It's pooping time.